All right, good evening, everyone. So, Brishas Damar Dasrad is it's a great source to be here in Rabbi Karapkin's shul. I don't know, Rabbi Karapkin, how much your Balabatim understand. When Rabbi Karapkin served as the president of the Rabbinical Council of America, it's probably one of the most overwhelming jobs in the Orthodox community today. I mean, of course, there's plenty of honor that comes along with it, right? Wonderful, COVID, everybody loves you and appreciates all of the efforts you put in. Occasionally, there are some complaints, but they're few and far between. And I was privileged to see Rabbi Karapkin handle many, many difficult and complicated situations with incredible poise, incredible grace, incredible and impeccable midos. The truth is, all of the ingredients necessary for a true Manig Yisrael. So the Karapkin is an incredible schus to be here in your kehila. I would say it's really a privilege to be here in this community. I want to thank my host, to thank Mel and Karen for hosting me, for bringing me, and it's so wonderful. I get to see the Ram Mishpacha on in Baltimore, and of course it's an incredible schus to see the Ringos as well. This mishpacha is one that is very, very close to my heart, and I feel like an extension of my own family. I enjoy always getting to see them in the context of Arshul, but it's beautiful to see them, for the Rams in their home, and for the Ringos, for one of their homes away from home. It's hard to keep up where the Ringos are, Baruch Hashem, but we look forward to seeing you in Baltimore in just a couple of weeks as well. And as Rabbi Karapkin mentioned, you know, I said this at the Siyum, but I think it bears repetition, that here, you know, Baruch Hashem, I had the great schus to come in today, and we had such a beautiful siyum. Really, such a beautiful siyum with such a, both begashmius and beruchnius. Just beautiful dinner, and such a wonderful chevra, and just so nice to meet so many people. You know, individuals who I've seen, I met Lloyd, I've seen Lloyd on Zoom. I'm wondering, who is this guy, Lloyd? Is it Chazen? I wonder who it is. His picture is always off, right? But I always see the name. And Baruch Hashem, now I get to come to Canada and I get to meet him. But it was wonderful to meet some of the Chevra who I didn't know. I get to learn with each and every day. And now again, Baruch Hashem, so my Roberts, I get to see in Baltimore now that he has a son there as well, Baruch Hashem. So it's really wonderful. It feels like you know, sometimes you have one of these experiences where you think about Mashiach comes, it's going to be kibbutz galus, an ingathering of all the exiles. And sometimes, like when you go to a new community and you meet people and you didn't realize that you actually know them and you're learning with them, it's like a shtickle kibbutz galus. Like it's a little bit of a feeling of the ingathering of exiles. Although I feel I'm further exiled here, I'm not going to lie. I feel like this is an extra step of galus. You know, I'm still a provincial North American. So, you know, but it really is beautiful just to be able to meet an extended chevra. But as Rabbi Karapkin mentioned, it is so important for us to recognize that while we sit here in this beautiful shul, in this room, we just had a beautiful suda. Now, Amir, so I'm going to share some words of Torah. That Achinu B'nei Yisrael, that there are Jewish communities in the Ukraine that are just suffering. Suffering day in and day out. And not just the suffering, an overwhelming sense of suffering, of bombardment and existential suffering, a pikuach nefesh, a life-threatening suffering. And, you know, as I mentioned, even those who are able to get out and get to Eretz Yisrael, you know, to be honest, Israel is not equipped to deal with thousands of incoming refugees. And although it's beautiful that they're being greeted at the airport with song, I will tell you, I had a conversation with one of my balabatim on Erev Shabbos, who was trying to find Shabbos accommodations and meals for 30 Ukrainian families who were dropped off in Yerushalayim because they said they want to go to Yerushalayim with nothing. Nothing. They have their clothing, they have a carry-on suitcase, and there's nothing else. And it's true, they're out of mortal danger, but they're in a new country, in a new culture, with a language they don't speak. Eretz Yisrael is the homeland for each and every Jew. But when it's a land that you don't know, and you've been thrust there in the midst of regional conflict, it's overwhelming. And it behooves us, it really is important for us to really make sure that each and every day the plight of our brothers and sisters is front and foremost on our hearts and on our minds. And that's, of course, through tefillah, through davening. But davening is not enough. There are many, I mean, I'm sure there are many, many opportunities to give here in Canada. We have to give. We have to give. I will tell you what I told my shul today. We're doing a drive in our shul for clothing, just for clothing for the refugee families who came to Eretz Yisrael. I'm going to Eretz Yisrael next week and hope to be able to distribute money to different people. You know, it's Yom Tov is coming, and Yom Tov people buy themselves a new dress, a new suit, a new pair of shoes. If a person is privileged to have children, they buy the children new outfits. Whatever we're doing for ourselves, we have to do for our brothers and sisters in Ukraine as well. That's what it means to be part of Am Yisrael. And I think, again, this incredible organization that Mel and Karen are at the helm of, Klal Yisrael is all about chesed. It's all about chesed. And it's not chesed that gets headlined. It's not chesed that everyone knows about. It's the nuanced, beautiful, quiet chesed that we do just to make another Jew feel safe, another Jew feel secure, another Jew feel loved, enveloped by the collective arms of Am Yisrael. And it's overwhelming because we live in times where there's no shortage of chesed. There's no shortage of chesed, but you know, it goes both ways. I mentioned this again at this, I'm trying not to be too repetitive from the siyum, but you know, it goes both ways because there's also unparalleled wealth in the Jewish community now. We are living in a golden age. So if HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us wealth and he gives us means, that means he gives us more opportunities to properly utilize those means as well. So we should daven, we should give, and Emir Tashem, we dedicate our learning tonight in the zuchus of our brothers and sisters in the Ukraine, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should provide them a Yeshua, just to be able to get out, to find refuge, to find safety and security. And those who are delivered from literally the midst of the furnace and find themselves in a new land, in a new place, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give them the siyata d'shmaya and the incredible koach to be able to start life all over again. And Emir Tashem, and the zuchus of our learning, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should take care of all of Klal Yisrael. And Emir Tashem, the day should come where we shouldn't have to worry about Jewish refugees. The day should come where we don't have to worry about taking care of Jews in the midst of war zones or Jews who don't know the land and don't know the culture. But in Meretz Hashem, we realize how badly we need Mashiach. And maybe, the schluss of the Siyum, a lot happened in this room tonight. There's a Siyum, now there's a Shir. There's a lot of Kedusha in this room. And maybe the extra Kedusha generated by the events in this room tonight is all Klal Yisrael needs to tip the scales in the favor of salvation, and may it come speedily in our days. So I'm going to share with you just a short little piece about Purim. So if you look at number one, I decided to use source sheets only because I don't like to lecture as much as I like to be able to learn with the Chevra. So please, also, if you have questions, you could feel free to pipe up, to chime in. So there's an amazing Gemara, and it's perhaps one of the most enigmatic Gemaras in all of Maseches Megillah when dealing about Purim. The Gemara says, Omer Rava, Mechayiv Inish Levasume Bepuria Adelo Yada, Bein Ar Haman LeBaruch Mordechai. So the Gemara says a person is obligated. Rava says a person is obligated to go ahead levasume. Now we normally translate levasume as to become inebriated, to become drunk. The truth is, the real etymology means to become fragrant. Fragrant is a metaphor for becoming drunk. You drink a lot of wine, I guess you smell like wine. So a person is obligated, says the Gemara Mechayiv, person is obligated to drink a lot of wine on Purim. Adlo Yoda Bein Ar Haman LeBaruch Mordechai. Until a person doesn't know the difference between cursed is Haman and blessed is Mordechai. This is a Gemara concept that we're all familiar with. Interestingly enough, the Gemara provides a story right afterwards. Rabbi and Rabbi Zera decided to have their Purim Suda, their festive Purim meal together. Ifsum, they got drunk. Come Rabbi Shachte L'Rabbi Zera. Rabbi got up and he killed Rabbi Zera. That's how drunk they got. Rabbi got up and killed Rabbi Zera. You know, the Marsha comments on this Gemara. The Marsha says it can't mean that Rabbi killed Rabbi Zera. But the Marsha says what it means is Rabbi pushed Rabbi Zera to drink and drink and drink till Rabbi Zera either died of alcohol poisoning or was on the cusp of dying as a result of alcohol poisoning. What happened? L'machar bay rachmi v'achye. The next day, Rabbi realized what he did. He davened for Rabbi Zera to be healed. A miracle occurred, and Rabbi Zera either was healed or brought back to life. L'shana Amr, listen to this story. The next year came along. So what happened? Rabbi said to Rabbi Zera, I have a great idea. So Rabbi said to Rabbi Zera, I have a great idea. Why don't we have Purim Seuda together? Rabbi probably didn't have a full recollection as to what had occurred the year before. To which Rabbi Zera says, thank you, but no thank you. Amr le lo b'chol shaita v'shaita misrachish nisa. Miracles don't happen all of the time. So as I very much appreciate the invitation for the Purim Suda, I'm going to pass. So there's a lot of discussion in general about the halacha of drinking on Purim. So that you'll talk to your Rav about the halacha. So I'm not here to talk halacha, but rather here to talk a little bit of hashkafa. Because the truth is, this Gemara is troubling on a hashkafic level. And what the reason is troubling is because if I were to ask you to summarize all of Yiddishkeit in one word, what would it be? All of Yiddishkeit in one word, distill it down to one word, what would it be? Simcha, that's always good. Menschlichkeit. All right, it's probably more than one word, fine. Hey, Emuna, good. I'm sorry? Ava, beautiful, right? The truth is, really all of Yiddishkeit comes down to one thing, moderation. It's all about moderation. It's what the Rambam calls the Derech HaMemutza, finding the middle path in life. Judaism does not believe in extremism. Now, of course, the challenge, of course, is who's extreme, who's a moderate, what's the middle path? Okay, but big adol, and this is the beauty of Yiddishkeit. Like if somebody asks you, what's Judaism's view on Gashmius, right? What's Judaism's view on materialism? What's the answer? Like most things that somebody asks about Judaism, it depends. That's always a safe answer, right? It depends. And that's the true answer, right? Is materialism good, bad? It all depends how you use it, right? If materialism becomes the be-all, end-all of your life, it's bad. But if materialism is used, ultimately, again, to facilitate spiritual accomplishment, then it's incredible. It's all about how you use things, and it's all about using things in the right measurement, in the right moderation. What's striking about this Gemara is a seemingly rabbinic mandate to overindulge. And overindulge in something that could be quite dangerous. Remember, again, there's not one story of too much wine in Tanakh that ever ends well. It never, ever ends well. And so it's fascinating to see that here the Gemara is telling us that you should drink. You could say that Rambam gets into, again, you only have to drink a little bit more. The Pashat Pshat in the Gemara is telling us to get drunk. That's the Pashat Pshat. And it's so drunk, the Gemara says again, until you don't know, there's between Arur Haman, cursed is Haman, and Baruch Mordechai. And I just want to tell you, again, this is not a Lamda Shashir tonight, but all of the Rishonim and all the Achronim, they lose it over this Gemara. Because it sounds like, you don't know the difference between Arur Haman and Baruch Mordechai. What does it sound like? You don't know the difference between what? Between what? Almost like right and wrong. You know what it means when you get so drunk that you don't know the difference between right and wrong? You know what Chazal call that? They call that lot drunk. Shechruso shalot, right? Lot gets so drunk that he commits two repeated acts of incest, right? When you get so drunk that you don't even have a conception of to right and wrong. So what does this mean? Drink to the point that I don't understand Arur Haman and Baruch Mordechai? Are Chazal telling me to drink so much that I don't understand right and wrong? It can't be. So what is the Gemara trying to teach us? So there happens to be a beautiful insight. If you look at number two, in the Chachmas Manoach, the Chachmas Manoach was written by Rav Manoach ben Chizkiyo, who lived in the 15th century. And he says something, I'm going to do this outside, but I put it on the source sheet so you should be able to see it because it's a riveting piece. The Chachmas Manoach says, do you know what Purim is all about? Purim is all about Achdus. Purim is all about unity. Haman, the way Haman sold Achashverosh on the plan of annihilation is that he tells Achashverosh, Yeshna am ach echad mefuraz u'mefurad bein ha'amim. There's a nation that's scattered. These Jewish people, they're persecuted, and they still don't get along. You would think that if the world hates you, at least you would like each other. But these Jews, everybody hates them, but they still can't get along with each other. That was how Haman was able to sell us down the river. And so much of Purim, is our efforts to show Haman, you're wrong. You're wrong. We're difficult people. We are. Let's not pretend like we're not. We are difficult people. But we might be difficult, and we might be a little stiff-necked at times, but at the end of the day, no one has achdos like Klali. So I know my Rebbe is Rabbi Mordechai Willig. And Rabbi Willig always said that the Pasuk by Har Sinai says, Vayichan Yisrael neged ahar. The Jewish people camped singular opposite the mountain. And Rashi says, one people, one heart. And Rabbi said, it doesn't say one people with one opinion. Right? It says one people with one heart. Why not? Because Klal Yisrael never had one opinion and will never have one opinion. That's the beauty of our people. See, our goal is never to get to a point of having one opinion. our goal is to be able to get to a point of respecting other opinions. That we should be able to have a conversation. That we should be able to have a spirited conversation. And I should be able to say what I want to say. You should be able to say what I want to, what you want to say. And we could disagree vehemently. But you could be ishecha b'levechad even with different opinions. You could be one people even with dramatically irreconcilable differences. It's possible. It's possible. So much of Purim is built into the dynamic of Purim is a desire to show Haman, you got us all wrong. You got us. So listen to the Chachmas Manach says. This is incredible. He says most people have two different types of frayed relationships. Who are the two different types? So there are Hamans in my life. Who are my Hamans? Those are the people who have hurt me. They've offended me. They've upset me. They've wronged me. Those are my Hamans. And then there's another cohort of people who I don't like. Who's the other cohort I don't like? Those are my Mordechais. And who are the Mordechais? The Chachmas Manach says something amazing. He says, you know, if you look at the end of the Megillah says, U'Mordechai Ratzui L'Rov Echav. Mordechai was beloved to who? Rov? The majority of his brethren. And you read that passage, you're like, what? What more could the guy do? Right? He was the architect, one of the architects, together with Esther, of salvation. What more could a person possibly do to carry favor with Klal Yisrael? What more can you do than be the architect of salvation? And yet, Rov, by the way, what does Rov mean? What does Rov mean? Majority. In Halacha, what does Rov mean? 51%. You see, Rov doesn't mean like 90%, right? Because in Jewish law, in Halacha, if you have a very small minority, that's called the Miut She'ina Matsui. That minority kind of disappears. When we speak about Rov, Rov is 51%, which means 49% of the Jewish people didn't like Mordechai. 49% of the Jewish people, by the way, lest you shake your head in disbelief, more than 49% of the Jewish people didn't like Moshe Rabbeinu either. Do you know when everyone loved Moshe Rabbeinu? Do you know when everybody became enthralled in love with Moshe Rabbeinu? When he died, right? When he died, he was the hero. When he was alive, forget about it, right? Forget about it, which in general is such a mussar, how sometimes no one finds difficulty giving honor to the dead. Right, at a levaya, everyone stands up when the casket's being taken out. Right, you never see someone who says, "I'm not standing up for that guy." Right, no one ever says. Right, everybody stands up for the casket. And isn't if only we could replicate that in life? Right, if only why does it have to be till people die that everybody gives them kavod? Why can't we find a way to give each other? So the Chachmas Manoach says there are Mordechais in life. So Eben Ezra says, so how could it be that Mordechai is the architect of salvation? How could it be that only 51% of the people like him? Eben Ezra says it's very simple. People were jealous. Mordechai had glory. Mordechai had a position. Mordechai had money. Mordechai had influence. And what happens when you see people experience a meteoric rise? People get jealous. That's how it is, right? People are people. You see someone else having success, and I don't have that success, I get jealous of that person. So says the Chachmas Manoach, we often have two different buckets of frayed relationships. I have my Hamans, who are the people who just wronged me, that's why I don't like them. And I have my Mordechais, who are the people who did absolutely nothing to me, except I think they don't deserve that success. I think I deserve that success much more than they deserve that success. And so I begrudge them that success. And says the Chachmas Manoach something so beautiful. Purim, which is all about Achdus. What's the goal? Chayiv inish levasumi bepurya ad lo yoda bein arham lebarach Mordechai. He says the Chachmas Manoach, I know I have to reconcile with my Hamans, and I know that I have to reconcile with my Mordechais. What's the problem? Most of us have incredible difficulty with reconciliations. It's hard to make that first step. So the Gemara gives us an interesting piece of advice. You know what sometimes a good first step to reconciliation is? Good first step? Make a l'chaim. Make a l'chaim. You make a l'chaim with someone and it's an amazing, amazing thing what happens. Right? Chomazon doesn't mean drunkenness. Just sometimes a little bit of alcohol allows people to lower their guard in a healthy way. And when I lower my guard in a healthy way, suddenly I'm ready, receptive, willing and able to reconcile with those people who I have held at arm's length for all too long. Because isn't that what Purim is all about? Reconciliation with Am Yisrael. I know I say in my shul every year that besides the Rambam that says that it is better to spend more money on Matanos Le'Avyonim. Well, you didn't mention that this time. That you could go and fulfill Matanos Le'Avyonim through this organization also. Said it at the Siyum. Right? So Rambam says it's better to go ahead and fulfill the mitzvah, give more to Matanos Le'Avyonim and less to Shalach Manos. But there's another piece. Your friends don't need your Shalach Manos. Don't give Shalach Manos to your friends. One simple reason. Your friends already know that you like them. The proof to that is, they're your friends. They know you like them. They know there's a relationship. They don't have to get your whole beautiful themed Shalach Manos, right? They don't need it. They don't need it. You know who does need your Shalach Manos? Maybe the person who you've had a little bit of a rocky relationship with. Or maybe the person who's totally and fundamentally marginalized and lives on the periphery. The whole essence of Purim is all about reconciliation. It's all about creating and engendering achdus within Klal Yisrael. And the Chachmas Manoch says that the Gemara is teaching us is, you have to reconcile with your Hamans, you have to reconcile with your Mordechais, and if you need a little bit of alcohol, if you need a little bit of L'chaim to take off your personalistic edge so that you have the comfort to reconcile with someone else, go for it. That's alcohol well used. That's alcohol well purchased. If it engenders shalom and klal Yisrael, that's the mitzvah of Purim. But I want to take you on a little bit. Dechach mas manach, I think, is just a profound insight into the nature of the mitzvah. But I want to take you on a little bit of a detour for just a moment. The Chidush Yarim, if you take a look at number 3, Chidush Yarim has the Ger Rebbe. You can see over here, I put a little bit of a biography over here. So the Ger Rebbe has a dramatic take on this mitzvah of drinking on Purim. And he writes, Shebemishte diyayin, Yochel kol Adam lovo lidei dargas Adam harishon kodem achet. Listen to these words. Says the Ger Rebbe, the Chidush Yarim, when you drink on Purim, the Mishta Yayin, through drinking on Purim, listen to these words, a person could come to the level of Adam harishon before he sinned. Who said being Jewish is difficult, right? You just need to drink a little bit on Purim. Drinking on Purim, I could be propelled back to the state of Adam Harishon before he sinned. Dezeu chayiv inish levasume bepurya ad dilo yoda kilomar sheyagia lematzov uletikun shehaya kodim hayidia she'al yidei eitz hadas. So we'll pause here for just a moment. What the Rebbe is making reference to is as follows. If you take a look at number 4, so you know the story. Adam and Chava given one mitzvah, one simple mitzvah. Do not eat from the tree, Eitz Das Tovara. Do not eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. That's all. That's the only mitzvah. They defy that mitzvah. They do not keep that mitzvah. They consume. So the Torah says, if you take a look at number 4, Pasuk Zion, verse 7. Vatipakachna Eine Shnehem. Their eyes were opened up. Vayedu ki erumim heim. And they realized that they were unclothed. Vayitperu ale teino vayasu im chaguros. They took fig leaves and they made for themselves clothing. So says the Chidush Yarim something absolutely amazing. That when we go ahead and we celebrate Purim and specifically drink wine, mishte hayayin, we have the ability to be transported back to the state of Adam and Chava before the sin. Before the sin. Before the sin of the Eitz Das Tovara. And the Rebbe says, that's the meaning. You're obligated to drink on Purim ad dilo yada. Until you get to the point dilo yada. What does it mean dilo yada? Dilo yada is a reference to Bereshis. Vayedu, they knew they had sinned. You can get back to the point ad dilo yada. Before they knew that they had sinned. You can be transported back to the state of Adam and Chava prior to the sin. I want to say something. The beautiful part of being a chassid, I encourage everyone to become a chassid. It doesn't have to be externally, but at least internally, is when the Rebbe says something, you don't have to understand it. You just have to let it permeate your neshama, and it feels so good. I have no idea what the Chidush Yarim is saying yet. Well, we'll delve into it a little bit. But here's what I know. What he's telling me is the power of Purim, and the power of Mishta on Purim is that when I drink on Purim and I celebrate on Purim, I could transport myself Agdelo Yada. Before Vayetu Ke'irumim Haim, before they knew they were unclothed, before they knew what they were doing, before they knew that they had said, I could be transported back to a state of being before sin. That's the power, says the Sfas, says Chidush HaRim. He goes on. He says, Ki Ayayin, last two lines, of number three. Ki Ayayin Mevatel Es Dato Va'atzmiuso Shala Adam. Because what does wine do? Alcohol is mevatel the das. Alcohol negates intellect, right? For many of us, what it does is it amplifies emotion and dulls intellect. It takes away the das. Va'al yidei zeh, yesh biyado lehis alos lios kulo ruchni. Says the Chidush HaRim, through the mitzvah of celebrating on Purim with wine, I have the ability to propel myself back to the period before the first sin, the ability to propel myself back to a point where I'm kulo ruchni, totally spiritual. It's beautiful and it's wonderful. But what is the Chidush HaRim talking about? So I'm going to take you a little bit more, just on a little bit more of a detour, and then we're going to bring it all back together. Take a look at number five. One last piece, and then we'll bring everything together. The Zohar. So it happens, it's a beautiful passage from the Zohar that describes Esther Hamalka standing in the outer courtyard right before she's going to go into Achashverosh. But if you look at the last two lines in number five, he says, Purim is Karis Hashem Yom HaKippurim. Purim, why is Purim called Purim? So the Zohar writes, because it's a derivative of Yom Kippur. A derivative of Yom Kippur. He says, what's the connection? Dasidinlis Angabe. Because ultimately, again, Yom Kippur will be turned into a day of celebration. By the way, we have historical precedent for this. We actually had this in Daf Yomi not so long ago. In Moed Katan we had it, where the Gemara describes that the year they built the Beis HaMikdash, Shlomo HaMelech built the Beis HaMikdash, they did not fast that Yom Kippur. It was a day of celebration. They ate. They ate on that Yom Kippur. So this biblical precedent that there'll come a time during Messianic redemption when Yom Kippur won't be a fast day. Yom Kippur will be a day of incredible celebration. So therefore, again, the Zohar says that where does Purim come from? Purim is a derivative of Yom Kippur. But they seem to be such dramatically opposite experiences. Yom Kippur is so solemn and to a certain degree even heavy. Yet Purim is so jocular, right? Purim is so much simcha, an extreme simcha, and almost like, not even festive, but almost like a silly type of simcha. You couldn't find 2 days that are more opposite than each other. Yet the Zohar says they are inherently intertwined. Purim is a derivative day of Yom Kippur. And the Gemara says in number 6, and the Gemara Maseches Tainis is, Hal Rishon Gamliel, Lo hayu yomim tovim liyisrael kiyom kippurim, yom kippurim mishim deis beislicha u'mechila, yom shenitnu bo luchos achronos. The Gemara says, why was Yom Kippur such a day of simcha? Because Yom Kippur is a day of forgiveness. Yom Kippur's day we received the second tablets, forgiveness for the sin of the golden calf. It was a day of forgiveness. So the Zohar says that Purim is a derivative of Yom Kippur. That just like Yom Kippur is a day of forgiveness, Slichu Mechila, Purim is a day of forgiveness as well. So just keep in mind all the pieces we have so far. Number one, why are we drinking on Purim? Number two, the Chidush HaRim says, you drink on Purim, you are transported back to a period of time before the sin. Ad delo yada. You can get back to the point before Vayedu Ki'erumim Haim. You can get back to the point before they knew that they were unclothed, before they knew that they divested themselves of all their holiness. The Zohar, Purim is a derivative of Yom Kippur. But what's the greatness of Yom Kippur? Yom Kippur, Slicho Mechila, forgiveness. What does that have to do with Purim? One last piece that I promise we're going to bring it all together. Take a look at number 7, the Piyajetzna. So I'm sure you've learned the Torah of the Piyajetzna before. Rav Kolam has come, Shapira Hashem Yikom Dama, the Rebbe of Piyajetzna. The Rebbe of Piyajetzna was an overwhelmingly exceptional tzaddik. The Rebbe of Piyajetzna was a holy Jew who went ahead, despite having suffered staggering losses himself over the course of the war. His wife had passed away before the war. His mother passed away before the war. His son and his daughter-in-law were injured during the German bombardment of Poland on September 1st, 1939, when the Germans invaded, his son and daughter-in-law were injured. They both subsequently died as a result of their injuries. The Piagetsna had one surviving child, a daughter, and she was deported. She was rounded up in a selection, and the Piagetsna never knew what happened to her. And in fact, it's actually overwhelming because, you know, in the Ish Kodesh is a collection of drushas that the Piagetsna used to give every Shabbos, but whenever he was able to, he would give a drusha in the Warsaw Ghetto. And these drushas were sometimes, you know, given in underground bunkers, sometimes in apartments, wherever the minyan was taking place. And so there's a little bit of a historical debate if the Piagetsna wrote them down after Shabbos, or the Gabbai that wrote them down after Shabbos. I'm sure you're familiar with the story. The drushas were hidden in a milk canister and buried in the rubble of the ghetto. And after the war, Piagetsna didn't survive. And in the introduction to the Ish Kodesh, he writes about his daughter. And he writes about the day. He puts down the date that she was taken from him. And he writes so longingly, like a tefillah for her safety, a tefillah for her. And the Piagetsna didn't realize that even before he wrote those words, she had perished in Treblinka. The Piagetsna is, you know, it's like before, by the scene we were talking about the Lublin Rav. There are some people who, they didn't leave behind physical progeny, but they left behind spiritual progeny. Because we learn the Torah and we're just uplifted. I always say whenever I speak to mechanchim, to educators, I always feel like the Eish Kodesh should be part of the curriculum of every yeshiva, every day school, every Beis Yaakov. Because not only is it beautiful Torah, but it's a lesson in Mesiras Nefesh. Right? You know, we speak about challenges in Yiddishkeit. We can't even begin to fathom what challenges really are, what real Mesiras Nefesh actually looks like. So the Piagetsna, so much we could do a whole share about the Piagetsna. Maybe the next time Mo invites me back, we'll do on the Piagetsna. But for tonight, I'll just share with you something amazing. The Piagetsna is a piece on Purim. And he says in number 7 something amazing. He says, Shekedushas Yom Kippurim, this is number 7, Domer Likedushas Sheyesh Bepurim, Kedush Sheyesh Bepurim. So the Piagetsna is picking up on this theme that starts in number 5 in the Zohar, that again, Purim is a derivative of Yom Kippur. It's a derivative day. And so says the Piagetsna, the Kiddusha of Yom Kippur mirrors or is like the Kiddusha of Purim. V'nira, tehishvu adadi. The Piagetsna says, they're really, they're one and the same, which it's so dramatic to hear this. The Kiddusha of Purim and the Kiddusha of Kippur, one and the same. Listen to what he writes. Ki biyom ha-kippurim, chayiv kol echad mi Yisrael lehis anos velatsum b'chol isu b'chol matzov. V'rak im yavo lematzov shapikuach nefesh, Yitnu lo le'echol kidei chayiv. Yom Kippur, you have to fast. The only reason you don't have to fast in Yom Kippur is why? Pikuach nefesh, right? Or safek pikuach nefesh, right? If fasting is going to cause mortal danger or potential for mortal danger, you don't have to fast. So says the Piagetsna something absolutely amazing. A yid, a Jew, has to have mesiras nefesh for Yom Kippur. You have to be willing to put everything on the line for Yom Kippur. Okay, chas v'shalom, if fasting is going to cause me to lose my... that I'm not obligated to do. But anything short of that, Yom Kippur requires an awesome amount of mesiras nefesh, self-sacrifice. And look what the Piagetsna writes. V'hachi nami chayiv adam limsar nafsho l'smoach b'yom purim ad kidei mesiras nefesh. Says the Piagetsna. The same Mesiras Nefesh, self-sacrifice that you have to bring to Yom Kippur, you also have to bring for Purim. Velo ad bichlal, ach kol zman sheina simcha goveles bipikuach nefesh, mechayiv inush esmoach b'yom hazeh. An incredible idea. So the Piagetsna says, the Zohar links Yom Kippur and Purim, right? Purim is a derivative of Yom Kippur. The Piagetsna says the same way that I'm obligated to engage in Mesiras Nefesh, self-sacrifice, to fulfill fasting on Yom Kippur, I have to be willing to be Moser Nefesh to celebrate on Purim. Now, if we pause here just a moment, understand who the Piagetsna is saying this to. Right? He's saying to the Jews in the Warsaw Ghetto, we have to celebrate on Purim. Right? No one of us has difficulty in Mesiras Nefesh and Yom Kippur, because every day in the ghetto was Yom Kippur. Right? Every day was Rosh Hashanah. Every day was Yom Kippur. Every day was Tisha B'Av. But the Rebbe was telling them, by the way, the same Mesiras Nefesh you bring for Yom Kippur, you have to bring for Purim. The same self-sacrifice you would engage in order to fast, you have to engage in that same level of self-sacrifice in order to go ahead and celebrate. So I threw at you now a lot of information. And it seems to be all disparate, unconnected. But let's weave it all together. If we go back for just a moment, let's talk about Adam and Chava for just a second. Go back to number four. Now that you've seen all the information, let's weave it together. So remember again, Adam and Chava commit that chait. They commit that avera. They eat from the eitz das tavara. And what does the pasuk say? Again, once again, pasuk Zion, number four, verse seven. Vatipakachna eine shnehem vayedu ki erumim hein. Now, let's go out of order. Erumim, they were unclothed. So the truth is the svarim bring down that it wasn't just that they realized that physically they were unclothed, but they realized arum doesn't just mean unclothed, naked, it means divested. They realized that they had one mitzvah. They had one mitzvah. God asked of them one thing. The Ribbono Shel Olam gives you an entire world, and he tells you, the world is yours, enjoy it, utilize it. I just have one request of you. Don't eat from one tree, that's all. They didn't comply, they violated. They were arum. They realized that they had divested themselves of their personalistic holiness. The word yada, doesn't just simply mean to know something. No, there are many things I know. But yadia represents knowing something on an intimate level. In fact, again, remember, the biblical word for marital intimacy is yada. Va'adam yada eschava ishto. Yadia, to know, represents knowing something, connecting something on the deepest, most intimate level. You know what the pasuk is saying? Adam and Chava commit this avera, vatipakachna inishtem, they open their eyes, vayedu, they thought to themselves, erumin hein, we're done. This is the end of the road. God gave us one thing to do. You know, we think about this and we're like, I can't believe they did this. I can't believe they did this. God gave them one little thing. And by the way, it's not even like it was a stake. Like, it's a tree, right? You know what I'm saying? Like this, what's the Yetzirah? There's a whole bunch of other trees, right? Just eat some other fruit, right? One thing HaKadosh Baruch Hu told you to do, and you couldn't comply. One thing HaKadosh Baruch Hu asked of you, and yet you could not go ahead and honor that. Vayedu Kerum, and the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh says, Vayedu, they knew on a deep and intimate way that they had divested themselves of any shred of holiness. They were naked. They were without anything. Totally spiritually unclothed. Now, the mistake of Adam and Chava is that they thought that they were forever deficient. They thought that they were forever broken. And that's why, again, there's a whole series of events. The whole marriage of Adam and Chava is a fascinating one, and the nature of their relationship and how they deal with adversity and setback. But it's clear that Adam and Chava felt after this mistake, this is the end of the road. There's no rebound. There's no redemption. There's nowhere else to go. Vayedu ki erumim heim is a definitive statement that says, we've hit the end of the road. There's no way to go back. There's no way to go forward. We are forever Arum. Adam and Chava were the first people to ever think that we are so damaged that we are simply beyond repair. But amazingly enough, they were fundamentally wrong. What's the proof they were fundamentally wrong? The proof that they were wrong is Yom Kippur. What's the whole essence of Yom Kippur? What's the beauty of Yom Kippur? Right? The Gemara says, we just saw number six before, the Mishnah Maseches Tainis, that the greatest, happiest day was Yom Kippur. The truth is, ask most people how they're feeling Yom Kippur afternoon, especially in Mincha time, right? You know, when most of the shul is not awake, right? People don't realize we lay in Sefer Yonah every year by Mincha. They're like, wow, I didn't know, when did we start that? Right, so, you know, ask people, how do you feel in Yom Kippur? People feel drained, people feel exhausted. How many people feel simcha? Maybe your body doesn't feel besimcha, but you're in the Shema. Your neshama has never felt a greater state of elation. Why? Because what does Yom Kippur represent? Yom Kippur is the paradigmatic example of second chances. That there's no such thing as being down and out. There's no such thing as hitting a brick wall and being unable to rebound. However I've messed up, no matter how many wrong turns in life I may have made, no one is beyond return, no one is beyond salvation. So you have this incredible dialectic. You have Adam and Chava, Vayedu ke'irumim hein. The tragedy of Adam and Chava is not the fact that they sinned, because sin is part of the fabric of the human condition. HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows we're going to sin. He accepts we're going to sin. The tragedy of Adam and Chava is not the fact that they sinned. The tragedy of Adam and Chava is that they sinned and they had absolutely no hope for salvation. They sinned and they felt that there was absolutely no way to backpedal out of this, or maybe not even backpedal, to forge a path forward. They gave up on themselves. They fundamentally gave up on themselves. And the proof that they were wrong again is ultimately Yom Kippur. The beauty of Yom Kippur and the simcha of Yom Kippur is Yom Kippur comes along. You know Yom Kippur says, no matter what you've done, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm willing to forgive you. No matter what you've done, I'm willing to give you a tabula rasa, a blank slate. I'm willing to give you a fresh start. I don't care what you did. You should enumerate it. Clap your al-chait, your ashamnu, bagadnu. You have to do so. You have to go through a process. But whatever. In fact, it's even stronger than that. Because remember, again, the power of Yom Kippur. Rebbe says in Maseches Yuma, Itzumo shel yom mechaper. The day itself atones, which means if a person spends the entire day of Yom Kippur in bed, doesn't get up, doesn't open a machzer, was that a good Yom Kippur? Is that a good Yom Kippur? Maybe it's not the best Yom Kippur, but it's still a great Yom Kippur. Do you know why? Because the day itself has cathartic properties, even if you do absolutely nothing. Because the power of Yom Kippur is Hashem telling us, I am willing to forgive, I'm willing to give second chances, I'm willing to give you a restart. And the truth is, so we begin to see, what does the Zohar say? So if Yom Kippur is a day of second chances and new beginnings, and no matter how badly I've messed up in life, there's no such thing as Vayedu Ke'erumim. You could always start again. You could always start new. It's not about second chances. It's about millionth chances. However many chances you need, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives it to you. What did the Zohar say? Purim is a derivative of Yom Kippur. Listen to what we do on Purim. You see, part of the tragedy of Adam and Chava is Adam and Chava felt they couldn't change their circumstances. They messed up. I can't change anything. This is the rut that I'm in. Yom Kippur comes along and says, you could change whatever you want in life. Now it's true, some external circumstances you can change. But when it comes to you, who you want to be, the personality you want to carve out, the identity you want to have for yourself, that is up to you and solely up to you. Purim is a derivative of Yom Kippur. And think about, what do we do on Purim? We give Matanos Levyonim. What is Matanos Levyonim? Why? Think about this. What do we do on Matanos Levyonim? Right? There's poverty in the world. So there are two ways that you could look at poverty. Possibility number one is, what do you do about it? You bemoan it. Nebuch. It's so sad that there are poor people in the world. It's so sad that there are those who don't have. You could do that. You could krechts, right? You could let out a sigh, right? You could do that. Or what else can you do? Be an agent of change. That's Matanos Levyonim. Matanos Levyonim says, there are circumstances that are broken in this world, but I could do something about it. I can do something. Mishloach Manos. Like I said before, who should you give Mishloach Manos to? To the individuals with whom you have a frayed relationship. Because Mishloach Manos teaches us that if things are broken, you could fix it. Your bad relationships don't have to be bad forever. Now, it's true sometimes if the other party is uninterested, there's nothing you could do. But try. Reach out. Don't settle for things being broken in life. Try to do something. We read the Megillah. The Gemara says, Kriyasa Zohi Lula. The reading of the Megillah is Hallel. Hallel is the way we connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Reading the Megillah is the way, is the vehicle of connection to God. Why do we read the Megillah? You know what? Sometimes, let's be honest, we don't have a very passionate relationship with God, if we're honest with ourselves. This, I think, by the way, is one of the greatest contemporary challenges in the Jewish community. Right? Remember, it's not about keeping Shabbos anymore, because the truth is you could pretty much do anything you want in this world. I have a woman in my shul who is in the president's cabinet, and she is a Shomeres Shabbos. You could do anything, be anything you want, and you could keep Shabbos. Right? Parnasa, Baruch Hashem, we have unprecedented opportunities. But yet what's amazing is we're so apathetic. So apathetic. And you know who it affects most? We see it in our children. We see it in our children. How could it be that there's so much apathy? How could it be that we take our Yiddishkeit for granted? How could it be that we're so quick to just let opportunities pass by? How could it be that we don't see there's so much beautiful, spiritual beauty all around us and we don't grab it? When we read the Megillah, what we're saying is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I want to reconnect. You know, I often say, the problem we have with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is we often have this conversation with God. We don't explicitly articulate it, but it kind of goes a little bit like this. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I love you so much. I really do. I love you so much. But I think we should see other people. You know, I'm just not quite, I have commitment issues. So I love you. I want to be clear. I think you're great. It's not you, it's me. Right? But I'm just not ready. Like, you know, I want to kind of be over here, do this, do that. I love you. I want to be clear that I love you. But I'm just not, why can't we commit? Why can't we just be all in? All in to Tefillah B'Tzibur. All in to Talmud Torah. All in to Chesed. All in to Tznius and whatever that means for different people. All in for Shabbos. Why? Why can't we just get all in? Why can't we just get all in and overcome our commitment phobias and our commitment issues? Again, each of us in our own level, where we're up to and what we're comfortable with. Beginning the Megillah is the opportunity for us to recommit to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to say, I want to fix this apathetic relationship. So now I begin to understand the Zohar. Purim is a derivative of Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is the day when I recognize that that which is broken doesn't have to remain broken, but that which is broken can be fixed, no matter how broken it is, because Yom Kippur is the day of new beginnings. Purim is a derivative of Yom Kippur. And so what do I do on Purim? I'm going to give Matanos Levionim. When I see, you know, the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh says, if you see something that's broken in the world, do you know why Hashem allowed you to see that? Do you know why He wanted you to see it? Because He wants you to fix it. Because He wants you to fix it. There's nothing you see in this world that Hashem doesn't want you to see. So if you see something that is broken, the Ribbono Shel Olam wants you to see it so that you could fix it. So you see that there are people who are suffering from poverty, great, Matanos Levionim. There are frayed relationships, Mishloach Manos. I'm non-committal in my relationship with Hashem, Mikra Megillah. Purim, light is the derivative of Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur, new beginnings, fix that which is broken. And Purim is the same exact dynamic. Fix that which is broken. But here's the challenge. The challenge is that it's wonderful to hear it in a shir, but often we don't believe it. You know, I've come to find this, and I don't know if Rabbi Karapkin has the same observations after, he's a longer veteran in the Rabbanus than I am. But I find it astounding how many people walk through life and inside they feel broken and they don't think that they could ever really fix themselves. And they put on a good face, right? Outwardly, they look together. Outwardly, they look confident, happy. But inward, shivrei kelim, broken utensils, not really believing that they have worth, not really believing that they matter, and believing that because of all of their life mistakes, I'm just never going to get it back on the rails. So we learn all of these things. Purim, Yom Kippur, three things on Purim, you can start again. But comes along the Gemara, and I'll take it full circle with this, I'll conclude. Comes along the Gemara and says, what's the obligation on Purim? Mechayiv inish levasume bapurya. You have to drink a little bit on Purim. However much you want to drink, drink a little bit on Purim. Why? And or for what purpose? Ad dilo yada. What's the goal? Like the Chidush Harim said, the goal is to get dilo yada before the state of Adam and Chava, before the state of the sin of Adam and Chava. But you have to get ad dilo yada bein ar haman lebarach Mordechai. You see, everyone believes that Mordechai has the ability to be righteous. But does anyone believe that a Haman has the ability to be righteous? Now, the Haman we refer to is not the Haman in the story, but the Haman that we refer to is often the way we feel about ourselves in the aftermath of profound life failure. Because sometimes I feel like a Haman. Sometimes I do things and I'm so profoundly disappointed in myself. I can't believe I did this. And I can't believe I was working so hard and doing so well. And I can't believe I let myself slip back into certain behaviors. I can't believe I allowed myself to say this, to do this, to act this. I just can't believe I did it. And so in my heart, I feel like a Haman. And the danger of feeling like a Haman is, we always assume, you know what happens to Haman at the end of the story. I don't want to ruin it for you at the end of Megillah, right? But it doesn't end well, right? Hamans don't have salvation. Hamans can't be redeemed. So if I'm a Haman, then there's no personalistic redemption for me as well. And comes along the Gemara and says, there could be nothing further from the truth. Nechayiv inish levasume bepurya ad delo yada bein ar Haman lebarach Mordechai. The obligation to drink on Purim is because sometimes what we need to do is dull the intellect just a little bit so that we could believe that whether I'm a Haman, or I should say whether I'm a Mordechai or I'm a Haman, I could get to the state of Ad Delo Yada. I can get back to Gan Eden before the sin. I could restart. I could reboot. I could recalibrate. I can start again. And herein lies the profound beauty of Purim. You see, you know what the challenge of Purim is? Purim often doesn't afford us the opportunity for introspection, right? Because often it's such a chaotic day. There's so much going on that really does a person say, oh, you know what? I sat by myself for 30 minutes on Purim and I thought about the meaning of life, right? But we have to carve out a little bit of time to be able to do that. Because the profundity of Purim is that ultimately Chazal telling us that if you just dull your intellect, and again, sometimes you have to think a little less and feel a little more. Now again, that might be intellectually offensive to some, right? If you're Hasidically challenged, that'll be a little bit offensive, right? But it's the key to successful living. Think a little less, feel a little more. And that's the essence of Purim. Because if we allow ourselves just to feel, then we'll realize that, you know what, we've all made mistakes. And some of us have made some really big ones and some really significant ones. And many of us walk around life feeling like we're damaged goods. And no matter what I do in life, it's never going to be good. Right? I'm never going to be the person I want to be. I'm never going to cultivate the identity I truly want. I'm never going to accomplish the things on a ruchni level that I've always yearned and dreamed about. Because I'm damaged, I've made too many wrong turns, I've made too many bad decisions. And comes along Purim and says, there's nothing further than the truth. Mechayiv inish levasume bepurya ad delo yada. Everybody could get back delo yada to the point in time of Adam and Chava before the sin. Whether you're a Baruch Mordechai or an Ar Haman, Purim offers everyone a new beginning. So this coming Wednesday night and Thursday, Yom Tov of Purim, the derivative of Yom Kippur is going to come upon us, a brand new beginning. The clock starts new. The slate is wiped clean. Your mistakes, madahava hava. What happened, happened. The past is the past. The only thing that is undecided is what the present and the future are going to hold for me. That's the power. That's the profundity of this day. May we be zochem mi'artz Hashem to tap into it, to appreciate it, and to make a beautiful plan for our blank slate of a future. Have a wonderful evening.